Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Deer on the road on the doorstep, wild turkeys stopping traffic, bear on the golf course, coyotes in the neighborhood. In case you haven't noticed, the wild is moving back in a bit as humans have moved out into suburbs and exurbs. But another population is down, the population of hunters. Now, some argue it's time to bring hunting back to keep order. Others say, whose order? And no way. This hour on Point, we've got deer on the patio, and we're talking again about hunting. You can join the conversation. Have you seen the wildlife comeback? Are animals crowding humans, or is it the other way around? Do we need more hunting? We will talk this hour with pro and anti-hunting conservationists. Joining me first from Fairhope, Alabama, is journalist Matthew Teague. He's written for National Geographic and many others. His feature story for Sports Illustrated is headlined, "A More Dangerous Game, Bears on the Golf Course, Deer on the Windshield, Wolves on the Way Back Home, How the Decline of Hunting is Changing the Natural Order of Predator and Prey." Matt Teague, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
What's going on?
Well, I started sort of poking around a little bit. My assignment was to just write a sort of state of the union of hunting. I have no particular feelings for or against hunting. I just started kind of looking around, and the place I started with these surveys that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does every 6 years, and there was a pretty clear trend shaping up there.
What is that trend? Hunting down 10% in their last survey, something like that?
That's right. Since 1996, there was a survey in 96 and a survey in 2006, and it was a pretty precipitous drop. It was down 10% in the past decade, and small game hunting, you know, sort of squirrels, things like that, that's down by a third almost.
So hunters 16 and older down 10%, down a third in some categories. Most acute drops in New England, the Rocky Mountains and Pacific states lost 400,000 hunters. And meanwhile, what's going on with the wildlife, Matthew?
Well, there's a resurgence. It dates back to about 1900 when the likes of Teddy Roosevelt, who himself was a hunter, started to realize that hunters were decimating the wildlife population. And so they set up certain laws to protect and conserve wildlife. And these were wildly successful, beyond anybody's measure, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so now
this put an end, among other things, you remind us, to commercial hunting, which was all over the place and a very big factor in drastically taking down all kinds of wild population.
That's right. The famous sort of indicator there is the passenger pigeon, which is no longer with us. But, you know, 100 years ago, there were literally billions of them. They flew in flocks so thick that they would sort of darken the sky, and they would take days for a flock to pass. Within the span of the 19th century, hunters wiped them out completely down to zero. And so that was sort of emblematic of the thinking at the time. And guys like Roosevelt wanted to turn that around. So they set up, these laws to protect animals from that sort of decimation.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, they were quite successful to the point where now the populations of different types of wildlife are roaring back. And the natural result is that as the human population grows and the animal population grows, we're seeing sort of increasing interaction, more friction between those two populations.
I mean, I've seen that just in my fairly dense suburb just in the last few years. I was thinking as I read your story last night, Matthew, I've seen this is practically in my backyard. Turkey, deer, possum, raccoon, coyote, moose on the tracks nearby. I mean, that sounds like the Wild West, but it is not.
Well, it sounds wonderful in some ways. I mean, who wouldn't want to, over breakfast and see a majestic moose, sort of walking by? But the reality is that these are wild animals, and they can be dangerous or at least a nuisance in some instances.
What's the danger?
One sort of case study is I went to the Hamptons, which is a place, sort of...
On Long Island, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Affluent section of New York and not particularly given to hunting.
Right.
It's probably been a long time since everybody suited up and went out to hunt in the Hamptons. But what they do have is a burgeoning deer population. The population is up to about 20,000 on Long Island from, I believe, just a few hundred in the 70s. And so that comes with lots of attendant problems, one being small things like, gobbling up flowers and expensive topiaries and things like that. But more significantly, there's been a real boom in Lyme disease in the Hamptons. What was a couple of years ago, I think there were 190 cases of Lyme disease. Mm. Now there are almost 600.
And that's a deer tick carried.
That's right. The deer tick is a significant carrier of Lyme disease. And so with the resurgence in the deer population comes the resurgence in pestilence like that.
Not to mention just smacking into deer, sadly, for everybody, and often dangerously for everybody, in the car.
That's right. That was one of the things that really shocked me was when I started looking into sort of the ramifications of deer on the road. It cost, I believe, over the past 5 years, it's risen 15% and cost something on the order of $1 billion a year, as well as 150,000 lives. That's obviously it's not the deer's fault, but it does show that when the human population and the animal population rub up against each other, there is some friction there.
But, Matthew, it was about at this point in your story where I began to scratch my head and just wonder where this was all coming from. I mean, Sports Illustrated, the magazine that you wrote this for, has for a long time included hunting in the pantheon of sport. But you went all the way 750 miles north of the U.S. border, deep into Canada, to find a case of a guy who'd been killed by wolves. I mean, that's a long way to go to find, the worst sort of problematic interaction here.
Well, it was an interesting case to me, and I wanted to go and sort of look into it because it was really the first officially recorded death by a human killed by wolves in North America, which really...
Ever? Or in donkey's
years? Well,
the first
one on record. Mm-hmm. As long as... I'm sure there have been, trappers and people out in the woods that just sort of disappeared. Maybe, I don't know, but this is the first time that there was actually an inquest in Canada to determine how the guy had died, and this was the first time that it's been recorded with any sort of official certainty.
But I mean, in all that time, one, it doesn't sound like a plague, and he's in a mining camp in Saskatchewan. That's not exactly the Hamptons or Winnetka.
No, not at all. But he was sort of on the front edge of that friction that I was talking about between humans and wildlife. It's not just that they're encroaching in our backyards, it's we're sort of encroaching in their backyards as well.
No kidding, especially with exurbs and people moving into Montana and Idaho and everywhere else. On the other hand, I'm reading right here in Helena, Montana, the capital of Montana, they now have to have deer roundups in the middle of the city. And then there's the question of whether, where do humans come off deciding that they can be the ones who march out and do all the killing? I'm sure people will look at it that way. Matthew, stand by there in Alabama for a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington, Doug Inkley. He's a wildlife biologist for the National Wildlife Federation. Doug, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
What's going on with human and animal populations that we might not have seen 20, 30 years ago?
Well, what we're seeing right now is a lot of interactions between humans and wildlife because we're taking over their habitat. We're moving in and pushing them out, and that makes it very, very difficult for so many species to survive, which is why we have so many species that are on the threatened and endangered species list today.
Are they also on the rebound? Do we not see wildlife populations coming back as forest cover comes back in many parts of the country?
Tom, a tremendous success story in wildlife conservation is the recovery of certain species of animals such as deer and antelope and moose. It's just been remarkable. Canada geese is another example. But we still have many species that, because of loss of habitat, are severely endangered and very much need to be protected under the Endangered Species Act today. So we have kind of two situations. One, continued loss of habitat, but two, where we've had the resources to do the management, we've been able to help recover wildlife populations.
Now, management covers a whole lot of activities. I mean, you talk to some people about hunting and they hear horror. You talk to others and they sort of treat it as environmental hygiene. How do you look at hunting as a wildlife biologist?
Well, in modern-day wildlife management, Tom, where regulations are set to maintain healthy wildlife populations, hunting is really not the issue. It is loss of habitat that is the bottom-line issue. That's what the problem is. You know, way back in the market hunting days when wildlife was commercially sold in the markets, there were no regulations. Wildlife were almost hunted to extinction in many areas. But today, in modern-day wildlife management, where regulations are appropriately set, populations can continue to be maintained, such as we're doing with many species today.
But does management include, does it mean hunting, culling?
Well, in some situations, it has to be hunting. And here's exactly why, Tom. We have so altered our natural landscapes through what we've done with putting in agriculture, putting in human development, changing the native plants that are there, but also by removing the large predators such as grizzly bears from the habitat and such as wolves. Without those top-level predators, a lot of the herbivore populations, such as white-tailed deer, are able to almost go through exponential growth. That is not good for humans. That is not good for the wildlife, because when an individual species like deer reaches tremendously high populations, it's damaging to the entire ecosystem, to the entire habitat. It changes everything.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about wildlife, humans, hunting. We're talking about more wild animals running around, humans all over, fewer hunters, and the debate over bringing hunting back. Doug Inkley is with us from the National Wildlife Federation from Washington. Matthew Teague joins us from Fairhope, Alabama, writer who's got a big story in the recent Sports Illustrated about bear on the golf course and wolves snapping at your heels, maybe a little north of the border. We've got more interesting voices to hear in this hour. Let's get a couple calls. Marty in Des Moines, Iowa. You're on the air, Marty.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Well.
I have a story about a deer. A good friend of mine's father was at a branch bank and was attacked by a deer, and it was so severe that he was in a coma for 2 years before he finally died.
How does a deer attack?
Just
hooves
sure
up in the front?
Hoofs.
Mm-hmm. Was this branch bank, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere?
It's in the city, and it was probably a mile from the city limits, but there has been a lot of new construction out there, housing, et cetera. And just like your previous guest said, the habitat is being taken away, and what they're doing here in Iowa is allowing bow hunting during certain periods of the year, which is a bit safer than with a rifle.
Because the bolt, the arrow doesn't travel as far as the bullet into somebody's suburban back window.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, I traveled down by the river here in Des Moines, the Des Moines River, and you see herds of deer. You have to stop your car and allow these deer to go across the street at certain hours of the day and night.
I was out walking the dog, and they came bounding past me out of the fog. I was totally taken aback, Marty. But 2 years in a coma, that's no joke.
No, it's no joke at all. It's very dangerous, and you can't blame the deer. They're scared. And but what are humans and animals to do if you know?
If they're cheek by jowl, that is the question. Marty, thanks for calling. Let me get another right here from Bella in Hubbardston, Massachusetts. Bella, you're on the air.
Hi there. I would have gone hunting this morning, but my sinuses were too congested.
It's too bad for you. Good luck for some animal.
Well, you know, I'm a landowner here in central Massachusetts, about 3 miles from the exact center.
Okay.
And I feel that I don't own my land. My land owns me, and my hunting is part of my attitude towards my land, in which I attempt to become part of the ecosystem.
So you assume what you see is your role as a predator, as a manager?
Steward. A steward. As a steward.
So what about what's the answer here? I mean, you're in the middle of Massachusetts, kind of in the boonies, maybe.
Their attitude towards the land. As your speaker said earlier, one of the major problems of finding deer and other animals in suburbia is that so many people have tried to cash short-term value out of land that comes to them through inheritance or other, that a whole lot of ticky-tacky houses have been put up, sold for exorbitant amount of money, and now their mortgages are crashing. These houses are sitting empty, and a lot of them won't last 10 years. But it'll take more than 100 years for that land to go back to the wild.
They may have bears busting open the ice cream freezer, but you're willing to go out and hunt as a steward, and we've got that perspective. Bella, thanks for calling. Let me get one more here from Columbia, South Carolina. Chip, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm opposed to hunting. You know, I'm a fisherman, and I don't really look at that so much as hunting, but I like the caller from Des Moines, you know, talked about bow hunting. You know, if hunters were to go out there, just do it like hunters have always done it for thousands and thousands of years, you know, hunt with the bow and all that. But I'm opposed to it. I mean...
Why? What's the difference between fishing and hunting?
Well, the thing about it is, I don't think, you know, I say bloom, but I mean it like, you know, when the fish overpopulate, you don't get out there, you know, at your fishing rods, you know, and try to, you know, just fish them out until you just dwindle down, you know, their population. But when you get out there and you hunt, you don't just hunt with regular firearms. Some people get out there with automatic weapons. They get out there with all kind of craziness, and they don't really hunt for the food part. I can understand that. They hunt for the sport. Sometimes they'll kill an animal and leave it there. Sometimes they'll just shoot them up, and that's how the dodo bird and a lot of different species, you know, they went extinct and all that. You just shoot them, you know, you kill them off and everything like that for sport and for trophy, and I totally oppose that. And with fishing, I'm a catch and release fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm not going to eat it, I'm gonna catch it, I'm going to take a picture of it, I'm going to put it back in a drink so it can grow big and happy.
Not so gory. Chip, we've got it. Thanks very much for that. Matthew Teague, I have heard as we looked around for this, even among hunters, some concern about a new style of hunting that's, you know, kind of automatic weapons, sprinkle a bunch of corn around, blast away, come in on your all-terrain vehicle, blast away. Some of the artfulness of it has turned off even people who are not philosophically opposed to it.
Well, I think what you're describing would be a non-mainstream hunting sort of activity. I mean, that anybody can do any sort of despicable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to any ethical hunter would regard that as an aberration. Same with, you know, it's funny, it's interesting at least that your caller mentioned catch and release fishing as more humane than hunting. And this is something I've run into before, but to someone who takes it seriously, I think they would object to that as is actually the worst thing to do. Is it to
throw a wounded fish back in the drink?
Yeah, to sort of yank a fish up, you know, in the most traumatic way, take its picture, as he said, and then put it back in the water.
Though for fishy populations, it's probably better than throwing it in the frying pan.
Well, you know, well that's a completely different question.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're fishing to eat, same as hunting to eat, it's a completely different activity than if you're doing it purely for fun.
Matthew and Doug, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation John Rochetta. He joins us from Long Island. He does a fair amount of hunting there. John, thank you for being with us.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. What kind of hunting do you do in Long Island, and why do you do it?
Well, most of the hunting that I do is with a bow and arrow. I do use a gun on occasion in the January season. And I was brought up hunting. It's a tradition in my family for many generations. And many people don't realize, but a lot of Long Island is open space, and it's got great hunting here, as you said in the program.
So is it for sport or is it for population control? You've got a lot of deer in Long Island. The Hamptons came up here. Is that what you're up to, population control, or just putting a venison in the freezer, or what?
Well, I can tell you when I go out hunting, I don't say I'm trying to control the population myself. I do enjoy venison. I have a 3- and 5-year-old girl who also enjoy venison. It's a natural organic meat with a lot less fat than beef. And if most of the people have given it a chance, do you like it? There's several positives that go along with it, such as population control, such as limiting the number of deer that get hit by cars and do get wasted. I do believe the deer have a place here, and unfortunately, the habitat being reduced is causing the human-deer interaction to increase. And that's why we're seeing more deer, along with the lawns and golf courses and farms that you see out in the east end of Long Island. They feed the deer. It's good for the deer, not so good for the human population.
It's a real family tradition in your family, John. I mean, you talked about teaching your daughters to hunt. They're 3 and 5. You've also talked about your dad. He's in his 70s now. He can't walk to a deer hunting stand anymore, but you will drive him out, prop him up with his, gun or bow and arrow and in the hunting stand, and just kind of, even if he can't fully do it, just to go through the motions, that's commitment.
I can tell you, he was released from the hospital today with a hip replacement. I'm hoping to get him back in the woods before December 31st with his bow and to finish the archery season in the woods as he wishes. He probably won't get a shot at a deer. We only take a shot if it is a humane broadside or the deer has to be perpendicular to you. And he's educated me that way as I educate my children. And it's more than just harvesting an animal. It's being part of the tradition and enjoying the woods and nature and really truly see what the environment has to offer, where most people that aren't hunters don't get that enjoyment.
Doug Hinckley, I mean, is this really necessary? There's enjoyment that's unabashedly described right there by John. 3 generations of his family in it. He sees it as a way of being engaged with nature. Frankly, no small number of environmentalists do, but then you bring in the animal rights question and people say, what gives humans the right to decide, make these life and death decisions? Is it a necessary part of the reality that we live in now, hunting, and do we need more of it than we have going on now with the hunting numbers down, as Matthew said?
Tom, we need to look at this from the perspective of good stewardship. Bella, who called from Massachusetts, mm-hmm. was exactly right. She's talking about stewardship of her land. That's what we at National Wildlife Federation are about, and that's what we think everybody should be about. In the case of hunting, it can be good stewardship where it is properly regulated and it is needed, such as in deer populations that have gotten so high. One of the callers commented that people are out there hunting with automatic weapons and they don't like it. Let me put it this way. Anyone hunting with an automatic weapon, first of all, is illegal, and second, should be arrested immediately, period. It is not allowed to happen. New hunters are required to go through a hunter safety course. And so we try to maintain good ethics in hunting. And again, anyone that eats meat, I think, understands that it's part of the human diet. It's a natural thing. And hunting is very much compatible with good stewardship about protecting wildlife for our children's future.
Let's go to Eugene in Harrisburg, Virginia. Eugene, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you know?
Thanks for taking my call, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment and say that, the stewardship theme here is really right on with all the hunters that I know and myself personally. Hunting to me goes a lot deeper as far as, it's a great way to spend time with family, to provide food for the family, also to control wildlife, and it provides revenue for state and local game departments, and, it really needs to be managed just like you would any other natural resource. It needs to be very, very carefully managed for the good of all wildlife and people. But
Eugene, what do you say, though, to people? I know we'll have listeners in very much in this camp who will be appalled by it. Say, this is brutal. This is, humans trampling on animals. We did that for centuries. We almost wiped them out. We've still got a lot of species going extinct. And this is just, humans ought to, retreat from the exurbs and let the animals have the running room instead of shooting them down.
Well, as with any species, they should be allowed a certain amount of habitat to thrive, and that's what national parks and reserves are about. Mm-hmm. There should be areas that are off limits to hunting, but at the same time, there should be adequate adequate areas for people to hunt and to also enjoy that natural resource. But usually the biggest advocates, and I've heard a couple of your callers mirror this, mm-hmm. For habitat preservation are hunters, because we do really appreciate the experience of the outdoors. And as a landowner myself, I will probably sign my land over to a conservation easement before I would sell it for development, and deprive myself of the money that I would get, because I think it's really more important to future generations that land be open more than my heirs, so to speak,
I know exactly what you mean, Eugene. I've got hunters in the family who are also huge conservationists for just that reason. They want to hunt ducks, and they want to have a lot of ducks out there in nature. Thanks very much for calling. Let's go to Avon, Connecticut, and Matt. Matt, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Well.
First, I'd like to say, I drive around the state of Connecticut. I'm in sales, mm-hmm. and I can't tell you the amount of deer, both alive and dead, that I see. And with the current state of the economy, I'm sometimes tempted to pick up some roadkill to bring home to the family.
Yeah. We're getting down there.
Yeah, well, the price of meat these days.
Yeah.
I think that there's something very noble about hunting, and it's in this society we live in, we're very disconnected to the life and death process, in that we go to the supermarket, we buy a little package of red meat, and we have really no connection as to what was involved with bringing that to the marketplace. And I think that hunting is one form. If you're a meat eater, I think that it's one form of creating an awareness about the life and death process. And if you're involved with that, hopefully you gain a little more respect for life and death.
Matt, thanks very much for that. And watch out for deer on the highway. Doug Inkley, dig in a little deeper with us here, because you really give this to us in some of its complexity. I mean, you say it's needed. It's got to do with stewardship at this point. But fundamentally, the problem, the conflict is there because human populations are and have encroached so deeply. So is hunting, do you still see it as something natural? Is it necessary now for both populations to stay healthy and safe, or could we step away from it and somehow be all right? Do you want humans to move back into city centers and get out of there? I don't know.
To look at it at its most basic level, Tom, really what hunters are doing is replacing large predators that we've removed from the ecosystems. It's either us as hunters or our two-ton automobiles that are the principal predators in suburban areas now for deer. So there has to be some way to maintain a natural balance, because if we don't do that, again, as I said before, mm-hmm. it ripples throughout the entire ecosystem. And when you have too many deer, they can eat up all of the natural vegetation, all of the native plants. Your regeneration of trees goes down, and pretty soon you just have this severe browse line and only old mature trees. It changes everything for all the other species of wildlife as well.
So at least when it comes to deer, but what about beyond deer? I mean, hunting isn't just deer. You know that.
Well, hunting certainly isn't just deer. There are many other species. And in modern-day wildlife management, we have learned very well how to be able to maintain healthy wildlife populations while also having properly regulated hunting. We do it through properly regulated hunting. But I think that one of the things that we need to look at in terms of people being outdoors, because Matt brought it up, is he was talking about the fact that people aren't getting out there anymore. Yeah. We call that the nature deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. People simply are sitting before their TVs, they're sitting before their computers, they're not getting outside, they have become disconnected with nature. If you grew up in the country, if you grew up on a farm, you understand the life and death process, mm-hmm. you understand the balance in nature. And unfortunately, our whole country is plagued with this nature deficit disorder.
We're going to look, Matt writes about hunting video games, that for some hunters have replaced that time in the woods. Doug Inkley with the National Wildlife Federation, thanks very much for joining us this hour. Great to have you with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about wild animal populations, human populations, and hunting. More wild animals running around, humans all over, fewer hunters, and the debate over bringing hunting back. Matthew Teague is with us from Fairhope, Alabama. He had a nice big piece in Sports Illustrated about hunting called A More Dangerous Game, How the Decline of Hunting is Changing the Natural Order of Predator and prey. John Rochetta has joined us from Long Island, New York. A land steward there, manages properties on Long Island, and does plenty of hunting there. We'll hear in a moment from an opponent, certainly of cougar hunting, but you can join us as well, 800-423-TALK. Let's get a call from Sandy in Coventry, Connecticut. Sandy, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I am a biologist with a group called the Living Earth Learning Project in Boston. And we are a group of biologists and biology teachers who give programs to schools in New England. And we talk about a number of different issues. Hunting is one of them. Also, environmental issues, bioethics, and whatever the teacher is that happens to be studying at the time.
So what's the view you take and teach on hunting then, Sandy?
Well, we approach it from a number of different ways. First of all, one of the things we talk about is that wildlife management is actually sort of a euphemism for hunting. The Department of Fish and Game a lot of times will try to increase the deer herd so that there will be deer to hunt. In, for example, in Connecticut, back in the 70s, we had a pretty scant deer population, and so the DEP decided that they would try to increase the herd size so that there could be hunting in the state. And they did a good job because we have a heck of a lot of deer here now, as your other caller commented on.
Sandy, we heard Doug Inkley say that the humans have and maybe need to replace top predators if top predators are not in the picture. What do you think of that?
And I agree with that. And in fact, there's been two articles in the newspaper this year in Connecticut about wolves, which they think may have come down from Canada, that have been sighted. One of them was killed in Massachusetts. And I don't know if they're, you know, coming down here and if they will be repopulating. I would like to see that. I would like to see the big predators come back, because one of the comments I made earlier, I'm talking to one of your other employees there, was that when humans hunt, they don't hunt like the predators, like the wolves and the coyotes and the cougars. Those animals have the ability to pick out the weak and the sick and the old.
Yep.
And those are the animals that should be culled from the herd in order to make the deer herd strong. You don't want to go out there and pick out the stag with the biggest rack, because that's the animal that should be reproducing.
And instead, and humans go for the trophy buck. And
that's right. That's right.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, the other problem is that hunters, you know, we also talk about, get a bad name from all the people out there that don't follow the laws. We had a poacher on our property. We have a farm in Coventry, and we have signs all over every 15 feet on the property. And this man came on the property, came into our pasture where our cows and goats are,
yep,
and actually shot a deer, putting, you know, the livestock in danger. So there are a lot of people out there who don't follow the laws that are already on the books. The other thing we talk about that I think is really important, and you're hearing a lot of talk about this in New England, is planning for open space, that each town should have a management plan that includes not only businesses and residential development, but also open space and greenways that connect the different towns together so that animals have a way safely of going back and forth to reproduce from one town to another, where they don't have to cross roads and they don't have to come in contact with huge populations of people, and they can live in a safer manner.
Sandy, you've got the big picture there, and we appreciate your sharing it, thinking about where hunters may or may not fit into it. Thanks for calling. I want to reach out now, if I may, to Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia. We're joined by Brian Vincent. He's founder of a group called Big Wildlife. It's based in Oregon. It's a conservation group. He's worked with the National Audubon Society, the Northwest Ecosystem Alliance, the Animal Protection Institute. Brian, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're hearing a lot about what some people see as a need for human hunting in this hour. because populations are right up against each other, because things, balances get out of whack. You've paid a lot of attention to cougar in particular. Cougar hunting in the American Northwest has come back now. How do you see it?
Well, I want to take issue with a lot of statements that were made on the program. The first was Mr. Teague, I believe, was saying that he thinks that some of these barbaric practices that a caller mentioned are sort of an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's not true. Some of the most horrific barbaric practices used to kill large predators like cougars, wolves, and bears, coyotes, are legal in many states. For example, baiting is legal in a number of states. In Idaho, you can put out jelly donuts, lard, dog food covered in honey, attract bears over a period of time. They come to feed every day, and then one day hunters can show up and blow them away at point-blank range. Hounding is legal in a number of states. You can chase cougars and bears with packs of hounds, either to hunt them, to chase them up a tree and shoot mm-hmm. them, or in some states it's legal simply to chase these animals for fun, to train your hounds. Coyote penning is legal in 12 states, where coyotes are caught live, they are put in enclosures, and every day these animals are chased by packs of hounds in order to train these hounds to go out and hunt. Now, mind
well,
you,
that's not hunting. I don't know what you call that.
But it's affiliated with hunting.
Mm-hmm.
It is to train these dogs so that they can become more effective at hunting out in the field. Can hunts are legal in a number of states where animals are put in enclosures and chased. So these are practices that are quite barbaric that are totally legal. Another issue I want to take with Mr. Teague is highlighting a story about a wolf attack plays into the hysteria that is perpetuated not only by hunters but also by state fish and wildlife agencies. We paint these animals, wolves, cougars, bears, as being these vicious predators that we need to be frightened of.
Right. But to be fair, I mean, he's acknowledged it's one in an awfully long time and 750 miles north of the U.S. border. So,
but when these stories occur in the press, they tend to foster a lot of hysteria. People get afraid of the unknown. And you have more chance of winning American Idol than you do of ever being attacked by a predator. Another issue I wanted to mm-hmm. I was glad to hear Doug talk about how there's a need to protect large predators, but I find it interesting that big wildlife is one of the few groups in the country that has called upon a number of states to end trophy hunting of large predators. Just yesterday we called on the state of Montana to end cougar hunting. We have pressed Oregon and Washington to end cougar hunting as well. We are pressing states to end black bear hunting. I would love to see the National Wildlife Federation take a formal position against trophy hunting of these magnificent animals.
So what, do you see hypocrisy there to say we need to hunt because we don't have top predators, but then we don't want to cut back on hunting of top predators? Is that what you're saying?
Can you say that again?
Are you seeing that as hypocritical?
Well, he was saying we need to protect predators, but at the same time, when the wolf, for example, was delisted in the Northern Rockies, the day after that species was delisted temporarily, there was open season on them. In a 30-day period, dozens of wolves were killed legally when federal protections were removed. So I would love to see some of the large conservation groups like National Wildlife Federation come out with a bold statement that says no more trophy hunting of these top and mid-level carnivores. We're not talking about killing these animals for food, some Norman Rockwell-like picture. These animals are killed so that somebody can have a rug on the floor and a head above the fireplace. And these are magnificent, majestic animals.
What about the human animal interaction when it's top mid-level carnivores? I mean, of course, the wolf is an awful far away example, but there is danger there. Are you just flat out against hunting these creatures? What do you see?
We are opposed to trophy hunting of these animals, and there are a number of reasons. There are scientific reasons to oppose trophy hunting of large predators. For example, they play a key ecological role in maintaining biological systems. Cougars and wolves, for example, will regulate deer and elk populations. If you remove the top predators from those ecosystems, the whole system starts to unravel. Secondly, there's no proof that hunting works for, quote, managing these animals. And I hate these euphemisms like manage or cull. Or,
but are you not even for deer and others, which can get to be pretty big?
I want to say focused on top predators because that's what big wildlife is all about. We are about trying to stop trophy hunting of large predators because there's no scientific basis for it. In Washington State University, they have a large conservation carnivore conservation laboratory there that just released a study in 2006 that said liberalized hunting and aggressive lethal control of cougars was actually causing more harm than good. It was actually increasing conflicts with communities, not decreasing.
And why? With human communities, you mean? Why would that be? Why would that be?
With domestic animals. Because what was happening is trophy hunters are going out and killing the large adult males. And in cougar societies, those large cougars serve as like police officers. They regulate the community of cougars. Sometimes they'll even kill some of the younger ones. When you remove the large ones, which, by the way, have lived a long time because they have avoided conflicts, they're more street savvy, what happens is some of these younger ones who are not as street savvy start moving into human communities and causing more trouble. So this Washington State University study found that an increase in hunting of cougars was leading to an increase in conflicts.
Fascinating, because you get the kind of wild young cougars who are not dominated by that single big old trophy guy, or you would say, we hope not, a trophy. Let me get a call right here from Wyoming, Laramie, Wyoming, and Miranda. Hi, Miranda, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I think a couple things. I think that I am not for trophy hunting, but I'm not anti-hunting. But I think we need to realize as a population that nobody manages humans. Nobody manages how many babies are born a year. And quite honestly, we gripe that animals are in our backyards, mm-hmm. but we put our houses in those animals' front yards. So if they continue
houses
to
and a lot more.
Be aggressive, mm-hmm. then it's because we've encroached on their territory. And quite honestly, they were here first, and we continue to grow and need these big communities and big houses, and we aren't thinking about them and what they need. And as far as cruelty goes, anyone who eats steak for dinner or chicken, if you sit there and consider how those animals are killed,
yeah.
nothing is kind about how those animals are killed and the fact that they're bred just to be killed. So
you might rather be hunted than live and die the way they do. Miranda, I appreciate that kind of subtle mixed view here. I think a lot of people are in that terrain. Thanks for calling. Let me get one from Tennessee, Ashland City, Tennessee. Sue, you're on the air.
Okay, what I was calling about, I am in touch with environmental groups. I have a small group here in Ashland City myself, and it's come to my attention that Governor Sarah Palin in Alaska is allowing the hunting of wolves by helicopter. Not only is she allowing that, she is giving out a $125 bounty fee for the front paws of these wolves. It's a travesty.
Because they're being hunted at all, or because of the way they're being hunted, Sue?
Well, the way they're being hunted, and these wolves have no way of defending themselves or even getting away from these helicopters. And then they just leave the bodies. They don't. It's just for the hunt.
Yeah. No. We heard some about that during the campaign, and I appreciate you reminding us, Sue. Let me get one more caller here. Thanks, Sue, for calling in. From Boston, Cindy. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, what do you know?
Well, I have an echo. I'm actually doing a film on deer hunting and actually deer in general. Man versus nature. We're pretty much out of whack, and it's really interesting as I talk to different people. Everybody has an opinion about hunting, and it varies. Most people are very angry. People who live in cities are very angry at hunters. They think that it's, you know, it's inhumane and so forth. People who live out more in the country, though, I find are a little bit more in touch with hunting because they see that as being sort of a life-to-death-to-life process.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that with deer, certainly in the northeastern areas, we have a huge problem because we have invaded those, you know, habitats. We've pretty much developed so many parts of New England that there are no places for deer to go. So you know, the people who want to introduce predators, I mean, that's pretty much not an answer in terms of, say, lower eastern Connecticut or...
Or bringing wolves into the Hamptons.
Right. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So what you have to think about is what you're going to, how you're going to handle it. And a lot of people, you know, and also deer, for example, they carry the tick that,
right,
that carries Lyme disease. A lot of, there's a huge epidemic, or I guess you can't say an epidemic, but it's endemic to New England and various parts in the United States. But
right, we sort of made the bed, and now we sleep in it with all of its complications. Cindy, our time is so short, but thank you for calling there. Matthew Teague, you remind us you've got states out there now trying to re-encourage hunting, trying to get new hunters into the system.
That's right. I mean, this is a... This is not a new thing, and I guess that's one of the things that fascinated me most, just sort of listening to the callers, is mm-hmm. that people talk about it as though this is a sort of a new activity, and I think you had mentioned, you know, should people be playing God, you know, by using guns and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. But this goes back to, you know, as I say in the story, when we were scribbling on cave walls, one of the first things we did was to draw deer, you know, deer felled by arrows, things like that. I mean, this has been going on for a long, long time. The new, the sort of modern attitude toward hunting is actually the unusual thing. That's the shiny new approach.
Yeah, of course, so is the shiny and all over the landscape human population that pushes everything
that's right
up against the tree bank. Matthew Teague, writing for Sports Illustrated, we're grateful to you for joining us this hour. Thanks so much for being with us from Fairhope, Alabama, Matthew.
Thank you.
And John Rochetta in Long Island, thanks for joining us, John. And Brian Vincent in Vancouver, British Columbia. Brian, with Big Wildlife, thanks for joining us, Brian. Thanks to our callers.
Thank you
very much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.